Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. Yes, we have another wonderful show in store for you today. And actually, it's an episode on a topic that I haven't really spoken about. I think in like the 10 years of over 10 years of doing the show, I don't think I've really touched upon this topic. And we will get to that when I introduce my guest in just a moment. But first, of course, how can we start off without our quotes of the day? Of course, I know you've all been waiting for the quotes of the day. So let's get going with our quotes from Mike Dooley in the Universe and from Abraham. Let's see what they have in store for us today. First, from the Universe: rainbows and butterflies, cattails and dandelions, waterfalls and rainforest, puppy dogs and dragonflies, seafoam and orcas, sunshine and comets, snowflakes and icicles, wildflowers and you. Did I think of everything or what? Crazy, sexy, cool, the Universe. Ah, we love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the Universe. Having a little fun with us today, as always, naming off some fun kind of things that we'll find throughout this universe, which includes each of us. And it includes each of us because we are all important in this world. We all add our unique brilliance, our own energy, our own light that we contribute to the world. And even when we feel like we're not really contributing much, even when we feel like, oh my God, you know, I'm depressed, I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm fearful, I'm whatever it is that I'm experiencing in the moment, and I think like, oh, the world would be better off without me. No, that's never the case. Everything in this universe is here on purpose for a reason, and we all contribute something. Even those aspects of the universe you think, I really would rather that wasn't around. I really rather that person wasn't here. I really wish that like this wasn't going on. It's all here for a reason. We may not be able to see in our limited perspective. We may be not be able to know what it is in this moment. But there is always a reason when we take the bigger, grander view of things. We cannot see it. We have a very limited perspective. I mean, we're here on this planet for such a minute speck of time compared to the overall timeline of time and space. So really, with such a short time that we're here consciously, it's really hard to see that. However, the universe sees all. Source sees all. God, if you want to use the term God, whatever word you want to use, whatever language you want to use, it's all here for a reason. We are here for a reason. You have something to contribute to this world. Does not matter how rich or poor, does not matter whether you're famous or no one knows you, does not matter whether you think you have anything to contribute. Because you're here, that means you do. You absolutely 100% do have something to contribute to this world. All right. Great quote from the universe. Let's see what Abraham has in store for us today. So, you could be on a high-flying disc that feels like love and appreciation, or you could be on a low-flying disc that feels like ornery. And if you're wondering what disc you're on, just notice the people around you. If they are ornery, that's the disc you're on. And if they are on your disc, that is your point of attraction, Abraham. Okay, getting back kind of a little bit to basics here with Abraham. And when they're talking about a flying disc, they're talking about the vortex. They're talking about, you know, the energy that we spin out into the world. And if you want to know sort of where you are energetically, where you are emotionally, where you are in terms of what you're putting out into this world, just look around you. Look around at who you're attracting, what you're attracting, what's coming to you, what's not coming to you, and it's all right there. We usually aren't very willing to see it, but if we really take a step back and look at what is coming into and out of our lives, that tells us immediately and clearly where we are standing. So if we're now, there's usually a little buffer, a little delay in things happening. But if we're, as Abraham likes to say, tuned in, turned on, tuned in, tapped in and turned on, and we're feeling great and we're joyful and energetic and grateful for everything in our life, we're going to attract people who are energetic and joyful and fun and amazing in our lives. And if we're kind of sad and sullen and low energy, that's the kind of people we're going to attract into our lives. We're going to attract more situations to make us feel that way, because that's what we're giving off. And the universe responds to what we're giving off. Now, this is a co-creative process. It's not always completely about us all the time. However, the choices we make and the energy with which we show up in life really determine a lot. 99% of what we're experiencing because of our choices and because of the energy that we're putting out. So if you ever wonder, oh, am I in alignment or am I not in alignment? Am I really feeling good or am I just fooling myself? Look around. What are you experiencing? Now, it could be that you're experiencing something that's very neutral. And by experiencing something very neutral, it really gives you an opportunity to really just see how you're feeling. And if there's nothing much going on, there's nobody coming into your life, there's nobody exiting, and you're wondering, like, where am I in this? You know, it could just be an opportunity for you to reflect and feel and choose where do you want to go? Because we often forget that we have so much power in our lives by what we choose to focus on. Now, look, if we've experienced some big loss, if we've experienced some trauma, if we've experienced something that has kind of pulled us down in a way, then, of course, we want to honor our feelings. We want to honor our emotions, where we are in the moment, and allow them to breathe through us. Yet it's really up to us to then decide, okay, I am feeling this. What am I going to do with it? Do I want to just continue to focus on the loss and what I don't have? Or do I want to shift that and remember the good times and remember what I do have in my life? And merely by making that decision and changing our focus, shifting what we're choosing to look at, we can totally shift around our energy. We can totally shift around how we're feeling and the thoughts we're thinking and the emotions that we're feeling. Now, I'm not saying we should not honor our emotions. I'm not saying that we should not be present to what's going on inside of us. Of course, we cannot help but to do that. Yet, there can be an overindulgence into feeling sad or upset. There can be an over-focus on, oh, this awful thing happened, so I'm just going to feel awful for the rest of the day. And so it's really a balance between where is it do we want to go and where are we today and what is that journey? And I think we're going to be talking about that a little bit, that journey that we want to go on. So we never stay completely still. We're always in motion. And the question is just, where do we want to lean? What direction do we want to move into? And when we decide on that direction, when we decide on where we want to go, we can honor where we are and we can move in that direction. So, two wonderful, amazing, beautiful quotes of the day from Mike Dooley in the Universe and from Abraham. And I have a sneaking suspicion, rather apropos for our guest today. And so now it is my pleasure to introduce to you retired professor of children's and young adult literature and literacy education and award-winning children's author, Dr. Anthony Mana. Through his many experiences and through his passion as an award-winning educator of 50 years, wow, this guy's been at it a while, Dr. Mana has inspired kids and teens around the world to become confident, skilled, and happily motivated readers and writers. He has taught in schools and universities in Turkey, Greece, Albania, and the United States, where he immersed kids, teens, and young adults in powerful, multicultural books and entertaining, action-packed activities to help them enjoy the discoveries about themselves and others that great books and their own writing can encourage them to explore. Dr. Mana's newest release, Lucas and the Game of Chance, here it is. Hope you all can see it. Oops. Is a reimagined Greek folktale, and it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Mana to the show today. How are you doing today, Dr. Mana?
Fine, thanks so much. What a great introduction. Thank you. And also your introduction before the introducing me is a spiritual journey. Thank you so much for enlightening me. I mean, it really was a great introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Dr. Mana. I'm really pleased to have you on today to talk about sort of nurturing children's spirituality. And it's really, you know, I tend to talk more to adults, about adults. That's really primarily my focus. I unfortunately do not have any children. So this really isn't a topic that I've had the opportunity to touch upon on my show, and I've been doing the show over 10 years now. So I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to delve into this subject that I've not really explored before. So we only have a couple of minutes before our first break. So I just want to ask you, did you know from the time, like you were a little kid, that you wanted to be an educator, a teacher, that you wanted to focus on literature? How did that desire kind of cultivate within you?
I kind of fell into it, actually. I mean, if I could go back a few steps, I started my career in a monastery. And I mean, I started it in a seminary, studying to be a Catholic priest. And then I moved over and I wanted to get deeper into it because it was such a spiritual reawakening for me. And so I went to a monastery. It was a farm in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I lived in community, which was absolutely fabulous. And I started to grow because I had been a very poor student. And what these priests and monks taught me was to think, to concentrate, to grow spiritually. And I needed that for a while, and they got me thinking. And I took my first writing course there, because in addition to our practices of learning, I guess I could say of learning how to be a priest or a monk, there were also academics, you know. And so I was majoring in biology at that point, and they would bring people in to us to teach us classes. And I studied ancient Greek. I studied Latin, you know, all those wonderful things that kept my mind. And I started growing up, you know, and when I took my first writing course, it was from I never had that kind of intensity where he taught us how to craft and was extremely critical. Now, I must step back a little bit again, too, because my father was a journalist in New Jersey.
Okay.
And, he was a sports journalist, and he was also a boxing referee and a boxing trainer in Manhattan. You know, and so he knew Joe Louis and he knew Jack Dempsey and he, that whole world. And every week I could hear him clicking those typewriter keys because he had a weekly column called Ring Highlights. And so when I look back now, I think that was an inspiration to me because I watched someone go through the process of finding his lead. And my mother used to say that in Italian and English. He's trying to find his lead. And it was like a celebration when he got that, when he actually had that paper in his hand and was going to deliver it. And then what we all had was Breyer's ice cream. Because
that's fun.
It was expensive. And so we can only have it at certain times. And there was, and that was the
gotcha.
So, I mean, it led me on that path to go back to your original question. It led me on that path to thinking about writing and thinking about academics. And then, you know, as.
Okay. I'll tell you what, let's hold it there because we got to take a quick break and we come back. Let's then pick up from there moving forward. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Manna. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over Facebook Live. And William, thank you, loyal listener. I do see you on the Facebook Live. And just as always, if anyone has questions or comments, just post it to the comment section of the video on the Facebook Live, and we'll get to it during the show today. Everyone, please stay tuned. We'll be back with Dr. Manna after this.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Anthony Manna, children's book expert, author of the book, Lucas in the Game of Chance, and educator of over 50 years. Wow. I can't imagine doing anything for 50 years. That's amazing, Dr. Manna. So anyway, at the end of the last segment, you were telling us kind of how you were, your father was a journalist, a sports journalist. So I guess kind of writing was a little bit in your DNA, and how when you went to seminary and then to the monastery and became a monk and then got introduced to writing yourself. I'm curious, like, your initial, you know, classes, sort of your initial foray into creative writing and writing, did it feel natural because you were around it so much with your dad, or was it like something new and different, and because of how you approached it, it was something that really lit you up?
Well, I think the best way for me to answer that, of course, is the fact that, you know, I became an academic. I mean, I left, you know, after leaving the monastery and not being ordained because my mind changed and I wanted to go in a different direction. But I took what they taught me. And of course, it sustained me for many, many years, you know, as I live out my life. But when I started moving in the direction of becoming an academic, when I started teaching the first year that there was Head Start. Now we're going back a while. And I was a teacher's aide in Orange, New Jersey. Yay! and I liked it. It was an awakening to what teaching could be, because there was the teacher who was responsible there was just a beautiful human being, very caring, very giving. And I thought, aha, so it's not only about giving information to people, it's about nurturing them. And so I started moving in that direction. I was finishing up my degree at Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I went on to get a master's degree, and then I was teaching for a while in New Jersey in a middle school, a high school, et cetera. And then it wound up in a PhD program. And because I thought, maybe this is what I want to do. In the meantime, I had stopped off in theater. And I was working on an MFA, a Master of Fine Arts in acting. And I wanted so much to do that because I've always, some people will say I'm a histrionic. But I think it's just a matter of, it seemed like another avenue for me to reach out to people. And I was training, and I really, really admired it and loved it so much, auditioning all around the place, you know, and then realizing that at this time now I had my son. And as he was growing, it was, you know, it was more demanding financially. And I realized that as an actor, I would be working for 3 months and then starving for 2 years, you know, so I decided to go, you know, to the academic world. And so I'm answering your question by saying that a lot of my writing at that point was, they were training us to be academics, which meant I was a researcher. And so I had to write, you know, I had one boss when I was at Kent State University, where I did about 30 years of teaching. He said to me, whatever you do, whatever workshop you do, whatever class you teach, whatever conversation you have, turn it into an article. And I thought, oh no, that sounds so laborious. And it was, you know, you had to publish in order not to perish, as they said. And so I kept writing academic articles in order to keep my job. But what happened was Kent State University did a magnificent thing for me. There was a program called the Greek Exchange Program, and that meant that I could go to Greece to a university there and bring my wares and bring literacy, because I was teaching courses in literacy with a lot of concentration on children's and teen literature and adult literature and theater and that type of thing. And so I brought language with me, the English language with me, to teach courses at Aristotle University of Thessaloniki, Greece.
Oh, wow.
And I know it was wonderful. It was a city that was established in 313 BC. So you can imagine, I know it was mind blowing. But I went there, and what happened was I decided that if I was going to learn anything, if I were going to learn anything about Greek culture, I should go to school. And so I wound up in, there was an experimental elementary school on the campus of the university, and I was allowed to go into this first grade classroom with my, you know, I needed an interpreter most of the time. I was studying the Greek language, but it was demanding. But the two teachers in the classroom spoke many different languages, because the Greeks do that. And so they helped me out. And what happened was, to make a long story short, I was there a lot. I mean, I was there about three or four times a week with these kids, listening to the way they were being taught, because I wanted to bring that back with me and maybe write an article about what the Greeks are doing in terms of literacy development. And in that same room was a university professor from there who did her training at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, who spoke English fluently. And she and I said, wait a minute, these stories these kids are reading, it doesn't sound like Greek mythology to me, because I could hear the term. It sounded more like fairy tale or folk tale, with ogresses and monsters and rivalry, sibling rivalry, and journeys and struggle, you know. And I thought, so she said, these are our folk tales and our fairy tales. And I knew that in teaching courses at in the university in the United States, that we really didn't have very many of these stories. We had a lot of Greek mythology, of course, as we have many other mythologies. So Sula Mitakivu, who was the co-author, decided that we should take on the Greek folklore project. And that's where it all began. So we did several translations, reshaping, because what we usually found were stories from the oral storytellers. And when the oral storyteller told, it was usually very rough. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had to reshape it. And also the other thing that we did, which I like so much, was I feel like we were sometimes disrupting the status quo, because there were, in the stories, there was a lot of sexism and sometimes racism. And sometimes relationships that just seem very tainted and really not needed. We didn't need it anymore, you know? And so we would work on that. It was just a fantastic, amazing experience for me to move from the academic writing into story writing.
Gotcha.
And gotcha. So that, so this book, Lucas and the Game of Chance, this I did on my own. I took a basic story.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, because it sounds like a lot of, even your early career, you pretty quickly focused on children, on elementary school, middle school, even high school. What was it about working with kids and educating kids and telling story to kids that really pulled you into that world?
First of all, they are so much fun to work with. You know, I mean, there's that entertainment value, but and also because when you work with them and when you write for them, with them, that you get a chance to introduce them to ideas and concepts that they may not have really thought about very much, you know. And so it's a tremendous responsibility and a tremendous privilege. You know, and the privilege and the responsibility keep drawing me back. You know, even now, after these 50 years of doing this, I go, like, for example, with Lucas in the Game of Chance, when I was working on the manuscript, I would do a PowerPoint with middle school kids and say, what do you think of the scene? What should I do with it? And see, they want to collaborate. They want to come into my adult world as a writer. And I love that, because they give me some great suggestions. And also because I feel like I'm collaborating with them, and we're both coming alive to the richness. Beautiful. You know, because every story, every poem, every nonfiction book, they're windows and they're mirrors. They're sliding glass doors, you know, and it opens the world. It opens the world. Yeah. And as a writer, when I was working on Lucas and the Game of Chance, that's all that was happening. I had no idea where it was going to go until it came to me, you know. And I don't mean to sound, you know, superficially spiritual. I mean, because you have to sometimes, because you are writing in solitude, which I love, going back to the monastery days of meditation, you know, that you're solitary and you are working inside your head. You are seeking help and vocation, you know, and it's a tremendous place to be, you know. And so things come to you, you know, and that story started off as a very economical folktale called The Snake Tree. And what I did was I added characters, I added scenes, I added conflict, and, you know, it all started working out, you know.
All right. Wonderful. Let's leave it there, because I see I have a question on the Facebook Live from Sanaya, my other another loyal listener. I'll ask that when we get back. And I want to start to dive into a little bit more of sort of the importance of folk tales and storytelling for children, and how that affects them as they're growing up. And perhaps maybe we'll get a personal story from you about maybe a story that affected you as a child. Okay.
Okay.
Wonderful, Dr. Manna. Thank you so much. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Anthony Manna, author of the new children's book, Lucas and the Game of Chance. And we will be right back after this.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Thank you all for joining me today. I see on the Facebook Live, my dear friend Frank. Oh, it's been a while, Frank. Great to see you. Glad you're listening and tuning in today. I'll get to Sanaya. I'll get to your two questions in a second. But Dr. Manna, I just want to ask you first about sort of why folktales and sort of these stories that, you know, as adults, we can sometimes be a little jaded about. We can be a little like, oh, they're just kids' stories. But why are they so important for the development of children? Why are they actually, I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure in your opinion, they probably do have a lot of depth and have a lot of importance in developing when we're young.
Well, you know, I think that whether you're an adult reading Kurt Vonnegut, or whether you're a child reading Marie Sendak, you know, story is the uncovering of lives, you know, so it's doesn't matter what age you're at, you know, and layers, deep layers of living, you know, and children see this. I mean, you're seeing, children can see living well and in harmony and what that can bring us to. And they can also see in stories living badly. And in distrust and hatred and deception. And so what story does is to open the world, you know. And so, I mean, children, when I read to children, when I read to those middle school kids, when I read passages to high school kids, it's right away, we're asking so many questions about how do these people get on with their lives? And what about their relationships? And what do they value? What do they believe? Why do they do it so badly sometimes? Mm. And also, who saves them? You know, mm-hmm. And they could see that in a very religious, spiritual way, and they could see it in a very secular way, where, for example, my character, Lucas, made a terrible mistake at a game of chance, a card game, and he lost everything. But he goes and he remembers the Greek legend about going to destiny as a character in the heavens somewhere, you know, and he goes on this spiritual journey, and there's a lot of struggle in the forest, in the enchanted forest, but he moves on, you know. And so the question becomes, when he finds destiny and he pleads with her to restore his life and her son, the sun, and her daughter, the moon, they'll help him, won't they? Mm-hmm. And that's the big question. And of course, you know, whenever I would go, I would start talking about my manuscript, I would always leave that question open, because that's the big question about life. How are we resilient enough to survive all this? And we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what do we need to do? How can we manage ourselves, you know? And I think that is so intriguing for me, to work with young children all the way up and through teenhood, you know. And then of course I was at a university and I had very young adults, you know. I was standing in front of them for days every year, you know, working with them, you know. And we would do things like take a poetry break, read a poem out loud. What the heck does that mean? Or see, the other thing that I love doing is improvisational theater with a structure. And so I would bring that into my classes, because then we could do things like, I created a drama around a segregation and integration. And we started talking about those values. We started talking about cultural values. I started bringing in the questions of, you know, who's right and who's wrong in this particular argument, you know, that type of thing. So, I mean, the whole idea is opening the world to young people.
Beautiful.
And their place in it.
You know? Yeah.
And that's what story can do, because story, you know, story is going to reflect, and then it's going to reflect the world around them. But the other thing is, see, one of the things that you mentioned in the opening was my dedication to multiculturalism. I started a conference at Kent State University that is in about its 36th year or something now. But it was a multicultural literature conference. And the reason why is because I had so many students of mine through the years who say, I don't see me in these books.
Yeah.
Where am I? You know, where am I? And then I started having Hispanic students come in and say, I don't understand. We don't see ourselves. And so, you know, there's the mirror, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and now it's getting better. It's getting better. And I mean, statistically, I don't have that handy. But I mean, there are ways of finding this out, because we've got, you know, organizations that track how many books a year are being published. And one of them is there's an organization, WeNeedDiverseBooks.com. WeNeedDiverseBooks.com.
Wonderful.
They are nurturing new writers. They have mentees and mentors that compete every year to help each other out, you know. And out of that has come a resurgence of interest, tremendous interest in multiculturalism. We Need Diverse Books. I would suggest people to go there and look, because it's so interesting. To see what's happening there. But so there it is, you know. It's like a road that opens up when we start walking on that road, the road of literature, the road of literacy, language, etc. we're going to find ourselves somewhere along that road, you know.
And that's, yeah. I just want to make sure I get the link right. It's weneeddiversebooks.com or .org?
You know, I don't know whether it's com or org.
Okay.
But I thought it was, it might be org because it is an organization rather than a company.
Okay. All right. We'll find it out. I want to post it to the live. I just want to get to Sanaya's questions because she says she wrote, as a child, I read and wrote poetry. I read and wrote poetry. I still write today. With a father as a journalist, did you feel as a child that you were subconsciously interested in writing, watching him? And then her second question is, was oral storytelling ever an influence in your bringing folklore alive in books today?
The first question about my father, I think, was I was very proud of him. I was very proud of him because I saw him struggling with ideas, you know, and he had a very conversational style of writing, and it was nice to see that. I didn't know at the time that it was planting seeds in me of wanting to be a writer, but I go back to it all the time. I have my siblings. I'm the youngest. Can you believe it? I have siblings in New Jersey, you know, and I say to them all the time, it took me a while because my father was sometimes very absent, but it took me a while in growing up to realize the influence of him on me, you know, for the writer in me, you know, and so that's my first question. Now, the second question about the oral storytelling, I wish I had. When I was growing, my mother came from Altrapalda in Italy at the age of 18. And she had stories, you know. I did not know that she grew up on a farm until her passing. I went to Italy. I had a photograph of someone that said the region of Altrapalda on the back of it. I went there looking for this man. I said, who is this person? Nobody ever told he was on the mantle when I was growing up, and he was some kind of a relative. All right. So I went to this village to discover right there. I walked around and they went, morte, morte. This, the person you're showing us is dead, of course, but let us bring you to the farm. I thought, what farm? This is the farm my mother grew up on, right there in the Valley of the Virgins, it was called. And so unbelievable, you know. And I met these people who had taken over, you know, and they remembered the history of my mother and her brother and the family, you know, I wish I had asked my mother the stories of her upbringing because there would have been an oral tradition there, you know. My father was an entertainer and a storyteller. The story that I was working on recently is, it starts off with my father juggling oranges in the kitchen. And we're all standing around like, oh, this is so weird, you know, that's what he loved to tell stories. He loved to entertain. And he was known throughout Manhattan when he went into these places where they were training to be boxers, to be a storyteller, you know. And he had all of these people that he met in the ring, outside the ring, in these places where they train boxers. So no, I didn't really have the oral tradition. I found it more much later when I was in Greece, and the Greeks loved to tell stories, and that's where a lot of it came from.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Manna. Wonderful. We're going to go out to our, believe it or not, last break. The show is flying so fast. When we come back, I do want to ask you about, you know, sort of maybe the change that you've seen working with kids for so long. Like, is there a difference in their consciousness in a way of their openness to sort of some of the storytelling? And also just about sort of the importance for children's books, not just for children's, but for adults as well. Okay. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're talking this hour with Dr. Manna, author of the new book, Lucas and the Game of Chance are out there and available. And we will be right back in just a moment.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am really happy that you're all joining me today. I was just checking on the back end to see where we have listeners from today, and we've got people from literally all over the world. I saw Brazil, Yemen, Ukraine, Russia, Poland, as well as all across the United States. So thank you all for tuning in today, as well as some dear friends I haven't seen for a while. Hi, Shem. On Facebook Live, Frank, William, Sanaya, thank you all for tuning in and joining us today. I truly appreciate it. Talking really about children's stories and the importance of children's stories today on our life today. And so, Dr. Manna, one thing I'm always curious about when I have guests come on my show like yourself, who've been doing what you're doing for such a long time, I'm curious, what kinds of changes have you noticed in children when it comes to, I guess, their openness to fairy tales, folk tales, and storytelling? Are children different today than they were 30, 40 years ago? Are they basically the same? Or what do you see has evolved or changed around children's storytelling?
I see very little difference, basically, because what I do is carry on the oral tradition. You know, and so they're always attracted to story and storytelling. If there's anything that is phenomenally different is the electronics and their devices, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, all personally struggling with that as a grandfather, you know, with my two grandkids, you know, watching them be distracted by that in a way, although at the same time, you know, the yin and the yang of it is that they also learn a tremendous amount on the internet, you know, but it is, it does take them away from some other functions, you know, but right. As far as story goes, honest to gosh, I mean, I am now, I was in education for 50 years of my life, you know, and I mean, I was all over the place, inner city, outer city, suburbia, you know, and it always remains the same. The story, I mean, I can walk into a room not ever having met these high school kids, for example, and just start opening up what I'm working on. And they really want to know, you know, that I've got a story, I'm crafting a story, this is what I'm going through, this is the creative process. It's very challenging, it's tiring, especially for an old guy like me, but at the same time, I keep at it, you know. And I think that, you know, I just, the other day, I picked up a quote about resilience. It said, I have it right here. It says, resilience means putting one foot in front of the other and meeting your developmental milestones, you know? And I think that's the way it always is, you know, is that like my character, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to carry on. We're going to look for a way to rectify what we've done, to restore our lives. And when I get into a story with whatever, whether it was 30 years ago or today, all of those messages, all of those themes are there for the taking, and they take them, you know. And I'm happy to report that I don't see, I mean, I know I picked up another statistic the other day that really disturbed me from reading is fundamental. Is an organization, readingisfundamental.org. And it says 25 million children in the U.S. cannot read proficiently. 63% of fourth grade students are reading below grade level. By high school graduation, only 37 of students read proficiently. You know what I think? I think if we could be reading to those kids aloud, introducing them to their own, we're not talking about that at all today. Maybe sometime I can come back, because the idea is that the other side of this is getting them to write. Because when they start, you know, when they start writing, now at Kent State University, I was working with a program that I adored, which is called the National Writing Project. It's from Berkeley, California. And we brought in teachers every summer who said, I don't write. I never write. I write shopping lists. And by the time they left us, they were writing poetry and short stories. And that's the same thing, because we said to them, if you want kids to open up as writers, you yourself have to be a writer. Right, so then kids get the opportunity to explore the world around them. What would they be saying now in their diaries, in their journals, about the pandemic? And about having to be schooled virtually, et cetera. What would they be saying? What are their disappointments? I mean, you know, we could go on and on, because I mean, that's where stories begin.
Yeah, a lot of stories there, a lot of journeys there, as you mentioned before, like so much of the story is really in the journey. And I have to tell you now, as I mentioned before, I don't have kids. I have nieces and nephews, but they live in other places, so I don't see them a lot. But every now and then, you know, my wife and I, we will watch, let's say, a children's movie that's based on a children's book. And some of them I find, even as an adult, I can really enjoy them. And there was one in particular that I thought was such a moving story called A Monster Calls. And it's a story of a young boy kind of dealing with his mother who has cancer. I don't know if you're familiar with the story or not. And this monster, which was like a giant tree, that would come to him every night and tell him stories. And even just the ending of it, of the child having to come to the dealing with his own inner struggle and his own inner emotions around the trauma and losing his mom and everything. I mean, for me, it was such a powerful story and really surprised me, like how much depth there was to it, considering it was quote unquote a children's story. So I'm curious, over the years that you've been doing all this research and work and working with fairy tales and stories from different cultures, was there a story that kind of came to you that really surprised you or affected you as an adult that was a children's story?
That's so interesting. There are so many of them, but there's one, many people will remember Where the Wild Things Are by Marie Sendak, which was also made into an award-winning film.
Yeah.
He wrote a story that a lot of people don't know very much about. It's very deep. It's very psychological. It's called Outside Over There. And it blew me away. And I had to keep going back to it. It's like it was like a mixture of psychology, a mixture of poetry, just an abbreviation, you know, at the abbreviation of life lived, to be satisfied, to struggle through, etc. And it's a picture book, you know, and it's a picture book. But I mean, you know, Pamela Travers of Mary Poppins, M.L. Travers. Mm-hmm. She said, I hope I have that right. She said, there is no such thing as a children's book. There are simply books of many kinds.
Oh.
And so I think that there's no distinction in my mind. You know what I mean? There can be some very powerful themes. Now, sometimes, yes, the language is going to be in such a way that a toddler is going to be able to relate to the animal characters, you know, from a toddler's right. perspective. But right. it's always the crafting of it in honesty and the crafting of it with integrity that, you know, that will present itself in such a way that an adult will walk away from that mesmerized, liking it, enjoying it, entertained by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very wonderfully said. I'm going to have to check this book out now, Outside Over There. I'm curious. So we're almost at the end of the show, but I definitely want to give you a chance to let people know if they would like to get in touch with you, find your books, learn more about you. Do you have a website? Do you have some place where people can learn more about you?
Oh, yeah. It's www.AnthonyManna, that's M-A-N-N-A, AnthonyManaBooks.com.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and if people Wonderful. Want to get in touch with me, also my email address is AnthonyManaBooks.com, Anthony@AnthonyManaBooks.com. It's easy to remember. No, I know that the one person who asked me two questions, what was her name again?
Sanaya.
I want to tell her, keep writing poetry and send me some. I would love to see some of your poetry. I read at least one poem a day because it keeps my old guy brain working very well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you, Dr. Manna. Sanaya is an old dear friend of mine. We've known each other for years and years and years and reconnected recently over Facebook. So I'm sure she'll be very happy to do that. I know Sanaya.
Wonderful.
So once again, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Manna, author of the new children's book, Lucas, spelled Loukas in the Game of Chance. A beautiful illustration. Children's book, highly recommend it. Dr. Manna, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. It's been a fantastic experience, and I wave to all the listeners all over the world. Take good care.
Wonderful. Take care. Now, thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned. Coming up next, it's Ken Foster and his show, Voices of Courage, followed later today at 5 p.m. with Antonia Thompson and her show, So Now You Know. And of course, this evening, Graham Dobbin and his show, The Mind Behind Leadership. Thank you all for tuning in. We will talk to you next week.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening. The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York. weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.